Full Service Radio programming is available on our website, fullserviceradio.org, and as a podcast, thanks to Simplecast. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
You're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Live from the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C., you're listening to The Tidbit, brought to you by Curate. I'm your host and the CEO of Curate, Kim Bryden. Do you run a small business or have dreams to start one? Well, here at The Tidbit, we've got your back. Each week, we talk through tidbits of knowledge around starting or running a small business with a food and beverage lens. And did you know that this show is based off of our biweekly newsletter that we send out at Curate? It's called The Tidbit, of course. And in it, we discuss what we're reading, eating, drinking, listening to, and learning. Five quick morsels of information to get you in the know and on top of your game. So head over to curate.co, C-U-R-E-A-T-E.co, to sign up. So today's tidbit of knowledge, you know, big news shook the small business food manufacturing space a little over a week ago. But before I get into this recent event, I first want to take a step back and talk about the boom of commercial kitchen incubators across the United States, which directly ties into this very monumental event. So for a long time, food entrepreneurs lacked access to space to produce their goods at scale. So seeing this as an opportunity, many businesses began popping up as these shared commercial kitchen incubators. This phenomenon also coincided with the rise of your more traditional, now well-known, co-working spaces. So people were very comfortable with the idea of co-sharing a space with many other businesses. But the challenge with kitchen incubators is that there are so many more moving parts to manage because production schedules vary based on product, health inspections differ based on ingredients and processes used. And fundamentally, in this typical model, it's a landlord-tenant arrangement. So if the business doesn't succeed, they, of course, can't pay their rent. And so therefore, the space is losing money if there's no longer that customer retention. Or also, what if somebody does extremely well and now can afford their own kitchen space? It's this very interesting in-between stage of growth that a kitchen incubator serves. And so in order to retain a lot of their customers, kitchen incubators will provide these wraparound services to hopefully improve business operations for their members, because of course that then helps everyone stay in business. It's very smart, and it should create a sense of security and community. You know, we're all in this together. Unless it doesn't. And the big news that broke is that Pilot Works, this commercial kitchen incubator first based out of Brooklyn, New York, and then expanded to Portland, Maine, Chicago, and Dallas, abruptly closed. An article written in a publication and newsletter called Food Tech Connect titled "Lessons Learned from Pilot Works' Demise" stated, "The company's closure leaves about 300 young makers with no facility in which to manufacture, eliminates primary distribution avenues for those tied to the Pilot Works distribution network, and creates a mass layoff for nearly 100 remaining employees with no notice and no severance. As these makers head into the holiday season, which for some can represent as much as 40 to 45% of their annual revenue, they will need new manufacturing locations, new access to capital to bridge revenue and loss gaps, and solid support from consumers and buyers." So how did this happen? The author of this piece goes on to address what she believes are the main factors in this abrupt closing and what lessons one can learn from this announcement. Three of her proposed lessons are as follows. One, food is a viable industry and we need people with expertise leading its much needed transformation. Two, diversity is not a marketing platform. It is about what you do. And three, the numbers have to add up. And what I glean from this is a deep understanding of your end user when you're building a product or service. I also want to emphasize the importance of building a business model that doesn't require endless amounts of fundraising from venture capital. The idea of scale for scale's sake doesn't add up in industries where business owners want to make their operations last for their lifetime or maybe generations onwards. They're looking for that security. So how can we create these ecosystems that build supportive infrastructure where small business owners can feel taken care of and supported? Think of the base of Maslow's hierarchy, for example. Shelter, location. If you can't rely on your home, your business home, being a constant, how will you ever be able to grow? I mean, naturally, you're always going to be operating out of more of a scarcity mindset. So I've invited Dom Bonaducci here today to talk with us about cultivating space for entrepreneurs to thrive. Dom is the general manager of Alley, powered by Verizon, a membership-only workspace for entrepreneurs and innovators here in our nation's capital. And in his role, Dom oversees Alley's operations in DC and manages collaboration between Alley and their partners at Verizon to help this community build next-level ecosystems for entrepreneurs. And at the same time, he oversees Alley's expansion efforts into California, beginning with Palo Alto and followed by LA, overseeing the management of the construction of this space, team recruitment, deploying brand activations around the Bay Area, and finding new partners to build out this new programming for the market. So we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be right back with Dom.
Some break music here from DC-born, LA-based producer Morris. Find his music on soundcloud.com/pmorris. Be right back.
Full Service Radio. You're listening to The Tidbit. We're live at the Line Hotel, and we're here with Dom Bonaducci, General Manager for Alley, powered by Verizon.
Welcome, good morning, Dom. Kim. Thank you for having me.
So excited. So as we mentioned, you oversee Alley's operations here in DC, and you manage these collaborations between Alley and their partners at Verizon to help community build this next level ecosystem for entrepreneurs. So first, I want you to define what you mean by a next level ecosystem. And for context, you've actually been cultivating incubators and creative spaces for emerging entrepreneurs across many sectors before your current role. So first, how do you define that next level ecosystem? And then also tell us about your journey. Like, how did you get to this world?
Absolutely. So I would define next level ecosystems as a community where the catalyst, whether it's a physical space, it's an online platform or a digital product, serves as both a operator of that ecosystem, but as a member as well. Mm. One of the things we pride ourselves in all of our locations, whether it's DC, New York, Boston, and coming soon, Palo Alto and Los Angeles, is that we put a lot of energy into learning as much as we can about our members such that we're able to identify opportunities for them and not just serve as their office managers.
Mm, I see. That, I mean, fundamentally, we're a part of the connected economy now, right? The knowledge economy. And I've spoken about this on the show, but it's not always just access to financial capital, but social capital. And so perhaps this is what you're alluding to, is that you are this connective tissue.
We're absolutely this connective tissue. One of the things about being aware of what our companies do is also being acutely aware of their needs, but also the individuals within each company. We know everything about their favorite colors, what parties they go to, what their favorite foods are, whether they're new to the area or they have guests coming, we can recommend a restaurant. But then more than that, we can hear about what somebody's working on, whether it's in ubiquitous connectivity or artificial intelligence, or even curating local products, you know, for the workspace and in a snack program, and really know what those needs are so that we can go out into the greater ecosystem and community at large, in this case, Washington, D.C., and find those opportunities for them. So yes, it's access to capital is one thing we always hear that is a great need, and but that's something that never changes. I, as a human, need access to capital.
Yeah.
I have bills to pay. But right. more than that, we need, and small business operators and owners need access to opportunity mm-hmm. to actually perform and show their stuff.
Yeah, love this. And tell us more. Let's take a step out of the alley world for a moment. What is your journey? How did you start thinking about ecosystems and ecosystem development?
Yeah, so originally from Los Angeles, and I came out to DC for college, and where I studied music and philosophy at the Catholic University of America.
And, wow, what a double major.
Oh, totally, yeah. Yeah, one useless major wasn't enough. Just kidding, CUA. I love my alma mater, and I had a great experience. But I quickly went outside the box on a very different avenue. I went into fundraising. I was working in a nonprofit graduate school that serviced the intelligence community.
Mm.
And through that, I had to learn to support not only our operation of the space insofar as the development and fundraising efforts are concerned, but also being, you know, a young lad out of college, you know, supporting IT and everything like that. And at the same time, doing the best that I could to support that infrastructure such that the trickle-down effect was a great learning experience for the students in the space.
Hmm.
So that was where I started and went all around through Living. I'm a Living Social alum.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Throwback.
Moved up to New York and worked at a startup up there. And then found my way back to DC where I was supporting another intelligence graduate school where I took my first kind of steps into an experience. And that was by building out an institution within this larger organization that allowed students to do their academic research on a platform and system that would give them the skills on platforms that are used in actual career paths, using a records management system that was cybersecurity compliant, applied a little bit of machine learning into it so you could ask questions about about Cold War espionage.
Was it kind of like an apprenticeship program wrapped in this learning environment?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it was an immersive learning experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're able to be in a facility that mimicked somewhat a federal office, but at the same time, you can fulfill your academic needs while also learning future skills.
Mm-hmm.
And so from there, then I took another step and started working with the Entertainment Software Association, supporting a...
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, it's a very diverse, you know, a mix of experiences that all kind of, when honed together, kind of prepared me for what Alley was going to be, what that experience was going to be for both me and my members. But with ESA, I supported a lobbying team in educating elected officials on the economic impact of video games.
That's cool.
Yeah. And it was there that was my first real deep dive into technology and where we're going with technology, and also learning about small businesses that it was a perfect match when Ali approached me and we saw each other and our eyes locked and it was love at first sight. And here I am today.
Wow. So that is fascinating. I mean, again, anyone listening to this, maybe you have a varied career path, but it's really about you being adaptive and understanding where are these different market gaps and then learning from your end users in each of these experiences. What were the challenges they were facing and how could you provide that opportunity?
And that's the only thing that I think really differentiates us. And we take that approach about speaking and learning from our end users and applying that into a design aspect as we build out these spaces.
Mm-hmm.
A pretty space goes a long way. They're really cool to work in. But more than that, we apply a lot of thought leadership into what a small business actually needs to operate within a space. What do meeting rooms actually need?
Mm-hmm.
Accoutrements and amenities go a long way. You know,
mm-hmm.
cold brew coffee,
yeah.
You know, our smart fridge and our sandwiches and, mm-hmm. and our Topo Chico or our sparkling water. It does a lot for me. And those are great, and it adds to a great experience. But mm-hmm. more than that, you know, these people, our members in our space, are there to generate revenue. They're there to make money. They're there to build a platform and a product and develop their careers.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be able to provide everything they need to do that while also participating in that shared experience.
Yeah, well, I really want to dive into this a little bit further because I'd love to know what you believe are these key factors needed in space creation, because it's not just four walls, right? It is that experience design. Again, something we've talked about previously here on the Tidbit. So for that user experience, for business owners to feel taken care of and able to build community, what do you believe is a part of that equation?
So I think there are two sides to it. There's the physical plant there's the, you know, the user experience when you walk in. I call it don't make me think design, right? You need to know where the front door is. You need to know that you can sit on the soft furniture in the lounge, and you need to know that you can walk around. There, you know, there's studies that show the direct correlation between mobility and productivity. Can you walk in the space? Is there a strong ratio of plants to individuals or square feet? Is there a large amount of natural light that comes into the space? Is your facility modular? Is it multi-purpose? So our main co-working area serves as also our main event space. We can host, you know, 90 people at desks and another 20 in soft furniture, and then we can flip it all over and turn it into a 200-person reception. We can do concerts, we can do seminars, we can do panel discussions that are edifying for our community, both in the space and abroad. There's really, it's being flexible.
Oh, absolutely. And speaking from my own experience at Alley, I've been there for a So Far Sounds concert, I've been on a panel, I've hosted a discussion, I've taught a workshop. I mean, it's a very inclusive space that you're able to adapt to all of these community building programming.
Absolutely. And kind of to my point about participating in this ecosystem and help and being, you know, providing a space that is self-supportive, we use Curate. We are an avid, huge fan of Curate.
Oh my gosh. We will get into that even more.
Yeah.
Thanks for the shout out. But before we get into that, I do want to know about Verizon and all of this, because Alley, powered by Verizon, it is a unique model because of this institutional bandwidth. You have this larger business that's behind you. I mean, it's powering you. And specifically at Curate, we're very interested and intrigued by how big and small business work together. So why is Verizon in the co-working space game, and how does this help them?
This is a pretty exciting topic for me to talk about. So Alley, powered by Verizon, is the result of some serious corporate innovation. One thing that we typically see that you never see is a global real estate program for a Fortune 15 or a large company at all being anything more than just a cost shop. Large real estate teams can offset costs by subleasing, but they've never sold a vision back into the larger company. So here's kind of the story and narrative. Verizon has 110 million square feet of real estate around the globe. And with the emergence of new technologies and advancements, a lot of that physical infrastructure is no longer needed. Advancements in the workforce allow people to work from home or work out of co-working spaces and flex spaces. And so they suddenly saw themselves with a large surplus of real estate, a lot of which you couldn't actually sublease out. We have what are called central offices. So a wireless phone call is wireless to the tower. And then underneath the tower are a whole bunch of cables that go down into the fiber optic backbone of a city. Those cables are housed in what's called a central office. And it's just four walls and a bunch of wires. And they're really, like, Stalin would be proud of these things. They're just very bland and self-serving. But what we did with that was consolidated. And at the same time, we had other teams within Verizon. We had recruiting teams. There was their corporate innovation and their 5G ecosystem teams. They wanted access to investment opportunities, procurement opportunities, recruitment opportunities, all these things they saw happening at the co-working or the small business levels, particularly within co-working spaces. So all this thought leadership put their heads together and said, hey, why don't we turn some of our surplus real estate into a co-working space? And obviously Verizon's doing their thing, and they're not about to run their own co-working program, but they would partner with a small business that is lean and agile enough that we can, you know, learn the insides and outs to an extent, learn to speak each other's languages, and operate that vision for them.
And be almost this research and development arm.
Outsource R&D is a huge aspect to this. And so we're bringing 5G nodes into all of our spaces. We have one in New York. We have one coming into our Boston location, DC, Palo Alto, Los Angeles.
What is a 5G node?
So 5G is, you look at your cell phone, it says 4G LTE. 5G is the next iteration of connectivity. And it's not going to be a real consumer product right off the bat. What it's going to be, it's the first use case is going to be fixed wireless. So we're no longer going to have to wait for our apartments and homes and our neighborhoods to be lit up for Fios. It'll all be wireless. You'll have a box in the house. It'll be powered wirelessly from 5G nodes around the city.
I see.
The other big aspect of that is it's super high bandwidth. So less than about 100 times faster than your 4G LTE bandwidth. Less than less than a hundredth of a millisecond of latency. What that means is, and the analogy I give is like a game of catch. So bandwidth is how fast the ball goes between you and me, and latency is how long it takes for you to catch and then throw it back to me. And so that's, you can in so far as data analytics is concerned, that's the ability to gather, analyze, and process data in real time.
Wow.
Yeah. And there's a number of use cases from video games to smart cities technologies to all sorts of stuff that
Yeah, and those are the exact types of members you're looking to incubate, right? The understanding of artificial intelligence, video gaming, smart city infrastructure. I love it. We are going to take a quick break and then be right back with Dom with his tips and knowledge about the local ecosystem.
More from Morris. This one's called Gemini. We'll be right back.
This is Morris, and you're listening to Full Service Radio. Bow, let's go.
You're listening to The Tidbit. We're sitting down with Dom Bonaducci, General Manager at Alley, powered by Verizon, learning best practices for creating entrepreneurial ecosystems. So you alluded to this, Dom, but Alley has been one of our top buyer partners at Curate, sourcing local food and beverage for your co-working space. And I just want to know, why is this important to you and to the team to support the local economy?
Well, it's not just important to Allie and our team, but it's important to our members. Shopping local represents the ultimate quality assurance program.
Ooh.
I know where all my food and all my products come from. I know who delivered them. We know our vendors because we have a great conduit between ourselves and the actual producers and distributors of these items. Mm-hmm. That's the Curate platform. Mm-hmm. It works great for us, and it really allows us to literally put our money where our mouths are.
Yeah.
In both directions. I eat the food. I myself will swipe at my smart fridge all the time and grab a sandwich or grab a drink or some kombucha or something, anything. And we go great lengths to make sure we're participating in that exercise.
Yeah, absolutely. And I am always so thrilled that we're cognizant of, again, how our money isn't just a mere transaction, right? It is all relationship building.
It's all relationship building, but it's also how we vote. Vote with your dollars.
Yes.
If you want to support a local, the growth of your local economy, buy local.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just you creating these local connections for your members, but again, down to your amenities and being thoughtful and conscious about that. So I thank you.
Well, we thank you.
So I just want to close our lovely show today with your tips for an entrepreneur, because when starting a business, finding a home for your operations is crucial. Like we talked about in the beginning of the show, I mean, it's your security, it's your safety net. You have to have comfort in where you're operating, or else you're always going to be in this scarcity mindset. So what are three tips you have for a business owner that they can take with them when they need to sort of suss out what type of space is best for them to feel supported?
So the first I would say is really hone in and identify what your needs are. Mm. You can find your coffee and your accoutrements anywhere, but really find out what is it that your business needs in order to be successful. Mm-hmm. Is it sunlight? Is it anything from sunlight to your workspace to power to Wi-Fi? These are bare necessities that you have to have. Really find out where the highest quality of those necessities exist, mm-hmm. whether that's in your living room or your local coffee shop or a co-working space. The second would be, learn as much as you can about your customers, more than just how your product affects them. There's a lot of data and insight to be found about any product and how your platform and product is going to succeed when you really know intimate details about your customers. It builds not just your equity in your product, but social equity. People mm-hmm. want to support people that they know. And if you can help your customers know you on a level outside of just your product, it will go a long way. Mm-hmm. And finally, the biggest one I would say, and this is one that I learned in real time opening up Alley, is look to your local governments. There is a lot of resources out there, especially here in DC, that support small businesses everywhere, from anything from capital to lines of credit to even invaluable thought leadership and guidance. They will point you in the right direction, because it is within the city's interests to help small businesses succeed. Small businesses represent you know, businesses under 500 people represent almost 99% of the small businesses or the businesses in the United States.
Yeah.
38% of that, you know, 38% of the of small businesses participate in the, I guess, let me rephrase, our GDP is made up of 38% of the performance of small businesses.
Wow.
As a country. Yeah.
That's fantastic
news. It's a very large number. And so with that in economic development and strategies, it is really, like I said, within the interest of small business or of governments to really support small businesses flourish.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Always love the numbers. How can people find more about you, about Ali? Like, how can people stay in touch?
Yeah, you can reach me. My email address is really simple. And I had this designed this way for this purpose. It's dom@ali.com. And you can visit us at ali.com. You can come visit me, walk into our space. We're at 2055 L Street Northwest on the fourth floor. Pop in, say hi. You can't miss the giant banner that says Ali powered by Verizon. And we hope to see you.
Amazing. Listener, if you have any topics that you'd like us to discuss around starting a small business, about food and beverage industry, let us know. Head over to curate.co, C-U-R-E-A-T-E.co, and say hello. And until next time, everyone, remember to scale thoughtfully and source locally.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.